When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Holy wisdom, holy word.
In the reading last week, Jesus was asked one question, but in his response, he answered two. Last week's question was, should we pay taxes to Caesar? And Jesus said, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God that which belongs to God. Except nobody asked him about God. Jesus just threw that answer in as a special bonus response. But then again, the second answer completely changed the meaning of the first answer. Because if we give to God that which is God's, then the only thing left to give back to Caesar is the idea that he is a representative of the will of God. Today, Jesus is asked about the greatest commandment. His answer was to love God with your whole being. But then he throws in a bonus answer. The second commandment is love your neighbor as yourself, he says. Except nobody asked him about the second commandment. Unlike the answer about taxes, the second unasked for answer doesn't radically alter the meaning of the first. This time, the second answer informs us about the nature of the first answer. How do we love God with our whole being? By loving our neighbors as ourselves. That's why he had to give these two answers to one question. Without the second answer, we could easily turn loving God into any number of things which would allow us to ignore or maybe even harm our neighbors. Religion is filled with such examples. But no, sorry, not this God. According to Jesus, to love this God is to love your neighbor as yourself. It's a package deal. Loving God, loving neighbor, loving self, they are all tied together. One manifestation of loving neighbor as self is found in the words equity and equality. Given the way our world is organized, ideas like equity and equality can truly be world-changing. Of course, there's still one way we can wiggle free of the life-changing, world-changing implications of these commandments. We could define neighbor the way the world does it. In the dominant way of thinking, we are the center of the world. Who we love, then, is measured in how they are related to us. Love becomes a way of extending our ego. We love our romantic partners, we love our children, we love our parents and siblings, and we love people who are like us, the people who live in our neighborhood, the people who go to our church, the people who live in our city or nation, the people with whom we share a language, religion, race, or class. This is how we define neighbor. We put ourselves in the center of the universe and determine our neighbor by how they are related to us. When I used to work as a counselor for people in crisis, I would have people come in every day, all day, needing financial help. Because there were so many people in need and so few dollars with which to help, we had to prioritize who would get our funds. One day, a man came in and asked for help. He was dressed in clean clothes. He was obviously educated. He let me know that he was a Christian and that he was in the fix that he was in because he was doing God's work. He said he needed help with money for transportation so that he could get back home. Without saying it directly, he was communicating to me that I should prioritize helping him because he was like me. He was a neighbor to me. But in trying to be faithful with the money in our program, we didn't prioritize based on how folks related to us. We prioritized the way we thought was most faithful. We prioritized those who were most vulnerable. I told him that we prioritized families with small children, that we didn't have funds for transportation, even for them. I told him what I told everyone who was like him, who had no place to live. I told him about homeless shelters in the area. Oh, he said, I can't go there. Those places are not for me. In his mind, homeless shelters were for those people, not people like him. I told him that homeless shelters were for people who didn't have a place to live, and that he seemed to fit that description. We want to follow Jesus, but sometimes we look for ways to avoid the implications of his teaching. Defining neighbor to mean those closest to us is one way we can do that, and we might get away with that if it weren't for Luke's gospel. In Luke's gospel, another lawyer asks Jesus about the meaning of the word neighbor. He was looking for where the work of loving neighbor ends, who is not included in that definition. And Jesus told him a story about a Samaritan who helped a guy who had been beaten and robbed and lay naked and bleeding in a ditch. The point of the story was that the Samaritan would probably not have been considered a neighbor by the crowd of people who were listening to Jesus. Samaritans were outsiders. They were foreigners. They didn't believe in the same way that Jewish people believed. In the story, the folks who were more like the guy in the ditch and supposedly faithful to the God that all of the listeners would have been faithful to saw him laying there and crossed to the other side of the road and walked on by. But the Samaritan stopped and helped. It didn't matter whether they were alike. It only mattered that one person was in need and another helped. For Jesus, the definition of neighbor is centered in God and not in us. God is at the center of the universe. And in God's eyes, the issue is need and equity, not race, not religion, not nation. The person on the other side of the planet is just as precious to God as the person who sits next to you in the pew. And that changes how we look at the world. God didn't love that white, middle-class, homeless guy any more or less than someone of another race or class. And as a follower of that God, I felt compelled to love in a similar manner. Violence is a denial of these central commandments of our faith, these commandments to love. Had we known in advance that Hamas was going to attack Israel, most of us would have spoken out against it. It was wrong, plain and simple. But no amount of past harm can justify such an attack. Likewise, it is important to speak out against Israel's violence against the people of Gaza. What is true for Hamas is also true for Israel. No amount of past harm justifies the suffering inflicted on either side of the line that separates Israel from Gaza. If the law was an eye for an eye, then Israel has already killed far more people in Gaza than Israelis were killed by Hamas. But the commandment to love has no room for an eye thinking. You cannot love God with your whole being if you're denying the inherent worth of another human being by harming them, even if they are guilty of causing harm. President Biden was wrong to endorse Israel's retaliatory violence, and that wrong is compounded with each new death. President Biden calls it justice, but it's not God's justice. It's retaliation. And vengeance is not justice. True justice would be to treat people in Gaza as we would want to be treated. Not just in terms of violence inflicted, but in terms of an equitable sharing of rights and resources. Two wrongs don't make a right, and an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. Punishing millions of people for the actions of a few is a crime. Today's text is Christianity boiled down to its essence. If you've only got a few seconds to explain what Christianity is all about to someone, simply remember these two commandments. But be sure you explain that neighbor, as defined by our faith, is everyone, with special concern for those who are most in need. If we follow the logic of love, these two commandments will guide all other choices. Today's text is the most radical foundation for reshaping the world that there ever has been. While politicians, the press, and others try to stoke our fears, love calls on us to boldly treat each other with love. While capitalism encourages us to grab as much as we can, love calls on us to share as much as we can. While our culture calls on us to draw circles of race, religion, nation, and language around ourselves, lines of ever diminishing levels of concern, love calls on us to break down all the barriers that separate us from others. If everyone is beloved, then there is no room for me and mine first thinking. There's nothing wrong for caring for the person who lives next to you, next door, or for caring for your child, your parent, or sibling. But our faith calls on us to take the radical step of loving those who are nothing like us. And the more we're able to extend our compassion and justice to those who are our neighbors on God's terms, the more we show the world a different way to love and a different way to live. Love God with our whole being and our neighbors as ourselves. Sounds simple, but if we live it, everything changes. And for most of our neighbors on this planet, such change can't come soon enough. Amen.